Welcome to My Warm Table. I'm Sonia Nolan, and season two of this podcast about passion and purpose is brought to you by Females Over 45 Fitness, or FOF, in Victoria Park.
My name is Kate Chaney.
My name is Bonnie Davies.
My name is Madeline King.
My name is Valerio Fantinelli.
My name is Lynn Beasley.
Hi, my name is Sharon Todd.
My name is Lucy Cook, and I'm the CEO of Space Drum.
I'm the first Aboriginal female funeral director.
I'm a psychologist and a professor in psychology at Curtin University.
You're listening on Sonia Nolan's My Warm Table.
Just sharing a yarn with her.
Have you ever been hacked? Are you worried about your data privacy? And does the word phishing mean something more to you than seafood? Well, if your warm table is like mine, then you may well have consoled a friend who's been unscrupulously scammed and lost money, lost data, and basically lost their trust in the cyber world. Cybersecurity is a growing concern for everyday people like you and me, as well as every organisation and government body. In fact, cyber attacks are costing the WA economy at least $150 million a year. So today, around the warm table, we're going to demystify a little of the cyber world and understand how we can better protect ourselves. I'm so delighted to be joined by Vanessa Van Beek, an old friend from my early 20s and a woman I've admired and watched with awe as her career trajectory has seen her become one of Australia's most trusted advisors and leaders in cybersecurity and cyber risk. It's been a golden year for Vanessa, as she was rightly being acknowledged by her industry peers, being a finalist for Australia's Most Outstanding Woman in Protective Security, being awarded Women in Tech WA's Outstanding Senior Leader Award, named a Rising Star in the Cyber Community Awards, and leading the WA Cyber Awards Security Operations Team of the Year. Have I missed anything? No. It's been a big year. Vanessa holds a law degree, an MBA, and postgraduate qualifications in psychology, as well as a string of cybersecurity credentials. With her unique psych and cyber lens, Vanessa provides invaluable insights into why and where human behaviour and cyber risk meet. So there is no one better to give us some crucial online tips. Welcome around the warm table, Vanessa.
Thank you, Sonia. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's an absolute pleasure. And Vanessa, I want to start with that unique combination of all of those amazing skills and experiences that you bring: law, business, psychology, cybersecurity, and that sort of junction where they meet. Tell me about your career journey to get there.
Well, I studied law, and law was a really great framework for making decisions. And then when I graduated, I found there were quite a lot of competition getting into legal firms for articles. And I decided to go with a graduate program at Telstra and joined the information superhighway back there, helping organisations actually change their environments from legacy technology to more digital technology. And I spent probably about 20 years working with Telstra, relationship managing customers and helping them with their journeys as they changed and got on board a lot of new digital technologies. And from there, I navigated into security, which has really been something I've been very passionate about how do we secure the digital environments that organisations build. And for me, leading is about people. And as I became more senior in my roles, I realised the thing I needed to influence most was people. Changing human behaviour is really difficult. So I went back to uni and did the postgraduate study in organisational psychology, really to help implement change and to work with teams in the workplace to create psychologically safe environments to do really great work. And that's been my great passion, is working with great technology, great people, and the intersection of those is how we build trusted environments for business.
And that's exactly perfectly aligned, isn't it, Vanessa? Mm. Because this understanding of human behaviour is so important. I read somewhere that the weakest link in cybersecurity isn't actually the machine, it's actually the human.
It's the human.
It's the human.
Yes.
And most of the largest data breaches over the past few years have happened because someone has fallen for a phishing scam. Is that right?
Correct. Yeah. So phishing scams are really a very big issue for people, and it's actually very easy to fall victim of a phishing scam. because people designing those scams are actually targeting human behaviour and weakness and focusing on urgency and tailoring those campaigns based on little bits of information that they can find out about you. So it seems almost natural to click on a link or to provide information. It's very. And the other big thing around the human component is human error. And even in the design of networks and how we build them and architect them, if we get a configuration wrong or we don't close a port or something like that happens, that then allows people to get into environments and then move within environments. That's called feeding off the land, and then they position themselves to escalate privileges to get close to the data that's really important to exfiltrate it. So, yeah, behind all major breaches is a human component. So while cybersecurity is a technical field, the biggest thing we need to influence is creating the right environment for our teams to do great work, but also influencing the behaviour of you and I, mums and dads, organisations, executives. How do we keep people safe? How do we encourage people not to use their work email for, you know, ordering things at work related to their personal lives, because they might be sharing passwords, and then that then puts organisations at risk. So I do a lot of work with execs to educate them about how to be cyber safe, because they're targeted, because they are the people organisations are targeting, because they have the most privileged information, the information about financial records. They hold a lot of access and sensitive information that would be prized for other people to get.
Yeah, and it's so easy because, of course, we carry our work in our telephones, don't you, and our mobile phones that we carry everywhere. We've got access to our work That's emails right. and access to some other work portals. So it's really important to keep everything so safe. So what are some of the strategies that you sort of recommend?
The first one is pause.
Yes, that's a big one, isn't it?
It's a really big one. Yeah. You know, we all live such busy, frantic, hectic lives. We're all juggling, you know, our work career, the demands of our family life, our extracurricular activities. And in the rush and haste of all of that, if something comes to you as a text message requiring immediate action, a lot of people will just click it.
Because it says immediate action,
because
right?
it requires immediate action.
Urgent.
But my advice is to slow down, to pause. And for any major kind of decisions relating any financial transactions, to actually do them when you're in your own home environment, try and leave 24 hours between something arriving and actually making a decision. Don't do anything too fast. So, yeah, it's almost countercultural, but my first advice is to pause, to slow down. And you'll see that particularly around, you know, the big sales that happen at Christmas time, the big sales that happen with in America, you know, I think it's a Black Friday that happens.
And the Cyber Monday.
And the
I was
Cyber
reading
Monday.
About that. Yeah.
Yeah. And the big thing there is, you know, it's all these great, you know, shopping
bargains.
And how do you know when you're on Facebook or you see something coming through your feed, whether it's a real organisation, a real product, and if you purchase it, it will arrive in Australia. So it's just slowing down, doing a bit of research, and always checking financial transactions.
Yeah.
I worked with a school and they had were doing a major building project. And they weren't doing the double check on is this person I'm paying actually the same person that we've actually put the contract in place, and some details changed at the last minute, and they did, you know, a $40,000 payment to someone who was not the builder.
Gosh.
Same thing. No, you know, having that double check, that accountability check, cross-checking, asking the questions, slowing the process down, checking with the financial accountant, ringing someone, is this your account details? I noticed they've just changed. Can I confirm them before I transfer this money? Those sorts of things. Because once the money's gone, it's gone. It can't be tracked. Often it will go into cryptocurrency or it'll be moved between accounts, and it's very difficult for the authorities, the police, federal police, to actually track and find those funds.
So the scammers at the other end, they've got their laundromat ready, haven't they? Ready to siphon it into all sorts of different processes that it can't be tracked.
Yeah.
They're so clever.
Yeah, this is the thing, Sonia. Don't take it personally. You know, this is a numbers game.
Yeah.
And the organisations who are doing these, some of them are nation states. Some of them are funded by governments. It could be Russia. It could be China. It could be Korea. They have the resources of large organisations behind them. People are coming to work and working in this field with a lot of resources. So it does look professional. It does look sophisticated. And it is, because it's actually in huge investments have been made, and the work is actually separated between lots of different parts of organisation on specialties. So it's its own business. I think the business of what's going on in cybercrime is now larger than the drug business in the world. So you get a sense of the size of the problem that we're all facing into, and we are just one of those numbers. So when it happens, don't take it personally, because you are just one of many people who have been sent a message, and on the hope that someone will click that link.
And someone does.
Someone does.
All the time.
Yes, yes. Yeah. I think it cost the Australian economy $33 billion last year, and that's the self-reported things that we know about, the cost of this to our economy. And that then flows into the cost of doing business to secure networks and protect business.
Yeah, and that you've just said self-reported. Now, there's probably a whole lot of people who are not reporting, again, going back to the psychology of it, probably feeling really silly, probably feeling really guilty.
Yeah. You know,
all of those human emotions of, oh, I can't believe I've been scammed, I can't believe I did that and I've lost all this money, how do I explain that to my family? So there's so much that sits beneath it, isn't
there? Absolutely. I'm a huge fan of Brené Brown.
Oh, me too.
Love her work on shame. But yes, shame is this master emotion that binds us. So when something happens in cyber and we pay, let's say we pay something to the ATO and it's actually not the ATO, there's a huge feeling of shame. What have I done? How can I tell the people closest to me that I've made an error? And how do I then report that feeling like I've made a really silly mistake? But it's absolutely vital that this gets reported so that we can educate others. And the way to deal with shame is to actually talk about it, because the more we talk about this, the more we normalise and bring it out into the light, people can then see it and we learn from each other.
Oh, definitely. We are our own, each other's teachers, aren't we? Mm-hmm. Yeah, most definitely. The idea that they're getting cleverer and cleverer in the background, the scammers I'm talking about, so they're getting cleverer and cleverer, and you've said nation states sit behind some of these. Is it, and I read something on your LinkedIn profile, actually, Vanessa, that there is, it seems that Australia is becoming more targeted. Is it true to say that Australia is a fair target for a lot of these organisations or companies or countries in regards to cybercrime?
Absolutely. Australia is targeted. There's two reasons.
Mm.
The first is we are a wealthy country. We have an amazing wealth. The average wealth of the Australian adult is $550,000. And that was reported last year in the ACSC Credit Suisse report, highlighting, and it's actually going up. And what that means is we've all got incredible assets. We've got houses, we've got cars, we've got superannuation funds. Each Australian person has significant wealth. The second thing that we need to understand about Australia is our psychology, that we oscillate between being at work and being full on at work. And, you know, the COVID pandemic taught us something, that we can respond to a crisis, we can harness resources, but then we oscillate to wanting to be at the beach. We want to go on holidays. We want to be with our family. We want to go to Roto. We want to have December and January off. We want to live. And the oscillation between this all on and all off,
it's crisis to coast, isn't it?
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. So there's a laid back kind of thing that is in the Australian psyche, that we do oscillate between these two ideas. And often when we are on holidays is when this will happen because our guards are down. We're not expecting it to happen. I remember I was travelling with a small group with a sporting team and one of the mums who was leading the group, we were just arriving to the stadium and she got a message and she clicked on it and she quickly tried to sort out whatever it was. Now, in the haste of doing that, she was scammed and her... she'd released her bank details and all of her bank accounts then became kind of in jeopardy. It's that kind of thing, right? It's this oscillation between 1 minute we're at work and we're kind of really guarded and we're really careful, but then it's the stepping out of that where this sort of thing where we're most vulnerable.
So what's the advice on that? Do we need to be alert but not alarmed? You know, that famous old saying, is that where we need to get to in regards to cybersecurity?
Absolutely. Pause. Slow down.
Think about it. Mm-hmm. Is it real?
Is it real?
Yeah.
Does this have to be actioned right now? Yeah. Cannot wait.
But they are so clever. I remember the Dear Mum scam that came through on WhatsApp. And I don't know if everyone's familiar with that, but it was a message that came on your, and normally on a Saturday or a Sunday morning, so on a weekend where you think your young adult children might be out and about. Mm-hmm. Dear Mum, I've broken my phone. I'm using this number now. You know, can you send me some money? It's something like that. Mm-hmm. And so many people fell for it.
Yeah.
So you've got to pause, you've got to validate. And just take a minute to just reflect on how clever the scammers are.
Absolutely.
So coming back to the Australian culture, though, we go from crisis to coast and relaxing and all the rest, but from an organisational perspective as well, there's all this fear around we can't let a data breach happen and fear seems to be one of the key levers in regards to trying to affect the culture to make sure that everything stands tight. What are some of the other levers, though, that maybe should and could be used around organisations to allow that consistency of behaviour, but also, you know, not use fear as the big stick?
Yes, I'm a big fan of preparation and doing the planning and then testing the planning and doing live scenarios. We can learn a lot from other industries like emergency response industries, aviation industries, about how they have test plans for emergency response and how they test them and enact them and actually build a muscle for those kinds of events so that when they happen, we actually know what to do. And it's muscle memory that we're working with. And the brain doesn't go directly into that red zone. We can actually keep the brain almost in that green zone where it can do more rational thinking and it can calm the ball and we can actually navigate our way through it rather than hitting the red zone, pressing the panic button and actually causing a lot of alarm but not a lot of actual action. So preparation is the key. And for organisations, that means having the right incident response plans, testing those plans, and having a program of constantly testing their networks and their environments so that we kind of can confidently say it's tested, it's known, we know where our gaps are, and we've got a plan to continually fix them.
And in regards to that testing, obviously it's really critical. And I think another aspect that I read when I was getting ready for our conversation, Vanessa, was that the tech industries and banks are pretty good at testing, but when it comes to national government infrastructure, not so good at testing. Tell us what the danger is in that.
Yeah, so critical infrastructure is a target like never before. And we've seen, when I talk about critical infrastructure, I'm talking about water, transportation, energy, communications. So these are primary targets for a cyber attack. There's two motivations as to why cyber attacks happen. One is for money, but the second is disruption. So that some organisations are out there to actually cause disruption. And you can imagine the kind of disruption that happens when you affect a power grid, a water distribution, a communications network, and what that does to how that ripples through an organisation. So the government's recognised this, and the latest piece of legislation they've put in place is around the security of critical infrastructure legislation, which requires those organisations to start the process of actually knowing where their assets are and actually reporting on incidents and putting in place a whole list of security controls to protect those organisations. But this is the point that's really interesting. This is where we see the cyber war become a physical war. Because we see with the escalation of what happened in the Russia-Ukraine conflict, that particular conflict started in the cyber realm, then moved to the physical realm. So this is becoming its own warfare. In the last report from the ACSC, they said that cyberspace is the new battleground. So the work that we're doing, we're building an army of young people and old people and people from all sorts of backgrounds with diverse minds to actually be part of that army to fight and protect Australia from that kind of activity. So it's the modern work that has this incredible sense of purpose as to why we do the work. We're protecting schools, we're protecting hospitals, we're protecting our police, we're protecting law enforcement, and we're protecting the very water and energy that actually drives our economy. It's really critical work.
It is. And can you tell me a bit more about the water case study that was done with Edith Cowan University, was it?
Yeah.
Tell me more about that, because I'm really, really interested in the whole water scenario, because I'm going to cast my mind back to year 10, right? So year 10 science class, I had a wonderful teacher called Mr. Dabowski, and it was the day after Chernobyl. So that happened when we would have been in year 10, Vanessa.
Yeah.
And Chernobyl happened, and he was really distraught about the situation and felt that it was going to trigger a whole escalation of global powers and World War III. He was being quite dramatic, but, you know, who knows? It well could have been something even more dramatic than it was. And he made us think in the science class about, in the event of a catastrophe, what is the most important profession? And we all sat there and we're thinking about it. And, of course, someone said, oh, doctor, of course, you know, you should be a doctor because you can help sick people. And then other people came up, lots of other important professions. And he said, no, you're all wrong. The most important person in a crisis is a plumber, because they can restore the water supply. Because if you don't have good water and clean sanitation and drinking water, then that's when your society is at risk. And it's always stuck with me. A very dramatic lesson. But it's always stuck with me, this idea of how important our water is, and something we take for granted because we're blessed in our country to be able to turn the tap on, we've got running hot and cold water, which is an absolute privilege in this on the globe. But to have our water source compromised is actually a really big issue for a country. So with that introduction of my year 10 story, Vanessa, tell me about the case study that you've done with water.
Yes. So let me just run through a couple of terms at a really high level. So we have IT, which is information technology. That's your enterprise network and enterprise security. And then you have this thing that's just off to the left called operational technology. And that's the technology that's used in water treatment plants. That's all the sensors and the valves that keeps the water flowing. So for years, the target has been the IT environment. Hackers have been targeting those networks. But more recently, the new prize for cyber attackers has been the OT network, because they want to control the operations of that environment. And they do that by overspeeding it, overloading it, disrupting the network. So that kind of industrial cybersecurity then leads to operational risk and safety risk. So when you think about some of the big things that's happened, particularly in the cyber breaches, we've saw Colonial Pipeline was one of the biggest ones that we saw last year, where they shut down that pipeline and it was 5,500 miles of pipeline.
Where was that?
That was in the States.
In the States, United States, right.
And they paid a $4.4 million ransomware, and the group that did it were called DarkSide. And we saw there that where the information technology system was attacked, it had this fear flow-on effect to the operational technology. So they closed everything down. And that had an impact on everything, fuel supplies and distribution, all those sorts of things. We saw people panic buying in America to get fuel and things like that. And then the next one that happens very quickly after that was the world's largest beef supplier, which was JBS. They were hacked, and they have 11 beef processing plants in Australia. So the ripple effect also affected Australia. And similarly, those systems had to be taken offline. And then we get to water, which was a very interesting case study in the water sector when we saw in Florida hackers remotely accessed an environment, changed the levels of sodium hydroxide in a water plant, and the changing of those levels would make the water poisonous, which would have impacts on health for many, many people. So that change was made by someone getting into an environment and changing the controls, affecting the quality of water that was then flowing through to that community. So that's the very critical nature of critical infrastructure, the water sector. Absolutely, people who, you know, protect, restore, secure those kinds of environment. Water is critical. It's a basic human right to have clean water. And, you know, we sit here at your table and I've got a glass of water. I should never have to think, is this water safe?
Yes.
If I drink this water, am I going to be poisoned?
Yes.
You know, the trust that we have in Australia is that we have supply of electricity, we have supply of water, it's clean, it's safe. So one of the big pieces of work that I was doing with my group was securing 18 water authorities in Victoria to make sure that we can ensure that the quality of water that they drink is safe, because we're now monitoring for cyber threats, that new environment.
It's just a whole other world, isn't it? We are definitely in a new era in regards to, like you've said, you know, sort of the foot soldiers of any sort of global crisis or war will actually be played out in the cyber field. It's not necessarily in the trenches as in the past. So this understanding of getting young people and everyone to really understand their part in this as a foot soldier is really important. Is there enough talent in Australia for this?
There absolutely is. And the answer to the question around the workforce of the future comes from getting really close to our TAFE and our university sectors. Also drawing on the amazing expertise of some of our veterans who've always worked in the fields of defence of assets, accessing new talent, people grafting into cyber like I did from IT, making sure that we have opportunities open for women, for people who may be neurodiverse. This is where we build this incredible workforce of the future. And, you know, when I talk to the universities and the TAFE colleges, they're doing amazing work actually bringing a new generation through who have really, really great skills. The trick then is to actually mentor those people in their first early roles so that we actually can keep them in the industry, because it's a very broad industry in terms of the kinds of skills that you need. And to be successful in this industry not only requires great technical skills, it also requires people to be able to communicate well, to write well technically, to work in a team. The problems are so difficult in this space that you have to work together, but the people drawn to work in this area actually like to work alone.
Yes.
So there's a role for people to facilitate that process of how do we solve problems together, and how do we acknowledge that in all of the teams, people have different skills and different ways of working, and that's okay, but we do need different minds to actually solve some of these really complex problems.
That understanding of diversity and different minds is so important. Mm-hmm. I remember doing a course some years ago with an organisation called Cognitive Edge, excellent organisation, and they talked about having the diversity there so that you can pick up weak signals, because it's the weak signals that will undo you because you don't see them coming. Mm. So, yeah, really, really different thinking. It's not the train on the track coming at you. That is actually the danger. Well, it is, but it's the weak signals that you're missing because you don't have the diversity in the room to pick it up. So, yeah, really important. I'm really pleased to hear that that's a really big focus for the future.
Yeah. And sometimes we have to listen to those quiet voices in the office. Sometimes we have to think about how we're working and can we present a problem and then allow some space for thinking, writing, drawing, working with Lego or whatever it needs to be to kind of unlock what that solution might look like.
So, you do a lot of work with Lego, don't you, Vanessa? Yeah. Talk me through that because I'm curious to understand it.
Yeah. I brought my Lego box in to my workplace and we had a number of problems we were trying to solve. One of them we just needed to kind of form a little bit more as a team. And I borrow a lot from Aboriginal culture because I think it does really give us an amazing capacity to listen. Mm. And so borrowing from Aboriginal culture, I asked people to share their pictures of their people and their place and just listen. And so we did that. And then following that, I then asked people to build some structures out of Lego and talk to what those structures were, to build what their superpowers were, and to share that one by one with just a lot of silence and listening, just one person talking at a time. And what we found was this beautiful method where people genuinely were listened to in the workplace. And we heard stories about their mental health journeys. We heard stories about their greatest desires for their careers. We heard stories about strengths and weaknesses. And then often we'll actually build models and connect models together to see where there's gaps. And then once that becomes visible, we can then step back and then say, okay, look at this. We need to bring this closer together. Or we've got too many people swarmed here and we need to spread it here. And everyone can see it at the same time, making the same connections. So, yeah, I've just been a huge fan of Lego for what it does just to relax the mind. Often people in cyber might just need some space to do the thinking. And Lego provides that medium to think, to pause, to and to connect. And storytelling, I think, is so powerful in the workplace. So I use a lot of that stuff. And, you know, we both had the great fortune of doing the Catherine McCauley program years ago.
We did.
And that was my first, learning around storytelling being just so powerful to build relationship and connections with people. And I've carried that with a lot of my work.
You lit up, Vanessa, when I said Lego, but I think it's also that understanding of leading teams. It's such a deep-set passion for you, isn't it, that mm-hmm. understanding of being able to influence the behaviour of a team in a really positive, life-giving way. Mm-hmm. Tell me more about your leadership philosophy.
I love working with people. I love to build relationship one-on-one with people. I love to see their careers and their skills develop. And I love to really get close to understanding what their capabilities are to actually solve problems. So I'm not the technical expert. I have good technical knowledge. The experts are actually in the teams that I lead. So it's actually allowing that kind of space, that trusted relationship where we can work together for great things to happen. And for every person, because we're people, that's different. That's mm-hmm. a different journey. How I support people looks different for every person I've worked with. But certainly building a strong one-on-one relationship, really being very clear about boundaries, really calling on behaviour when it's kind of below the line, really being clear about what the team's charter is and really connecting people to purpose. Why do we do this work? Who is it for? And coming back to that why, because the what and the when will actually happen. But it's often we get disillusioned in our work when we aren't connected to purpose. Why Definitely. Are we here? Yeah. And so just reminding people on what that purpose is and getting really crystal clear about the vision for a particular project or a particular time frame so that everyone's connected and contributing to that particular focus.
Mm. And you're fresh out of a retreat from Ubud, is that right, Vanessa? And you know, wonderful. Was it a leadership retreat or a yoga retreat, or you know, what were your takeouts from it?
Yeah, so I'm in the process of changing roles, and I took 7 days out to have 7 days in Ubud, doing a kind of an eat, pray, love personal retreat that was facilitated. So I did a lot of yoga, meditation. I saw a lot of beautiful green fields, which is really great for the brain. I read lots. I had some personal coaching while I was there. I visited some of the temples and did some guided tours around just cleansing with water. I visited one of the famous healers in Bali and just took time to kind of restore my own we're all in constant state of transformation. Mm. I work in transformation, but the biggest transformation actually happens internally, and those who are transformed transform others. So for me, that constant renewal is really important, and the best way to kind of explain that transition is just transformation is to look at nature, because nature is just always transforming. And you get that lovely feeling of the seasons in nature. You get the growth phase, you get the shedding or the dying off phase, and you get this kind of, you know, circular kind of feeling of what nature, how nature restores us. So yeah, that was just so delightful.
It sounds magic. Yeah. So you said you're in between, you're about to change roles. Are you able to tell us where you're going to next, or is that not announced yet?
Yes, I'm delighted. I'm stepping into an Australian leadership role with Avanard, which is a joint venture between Accenture and Microsoft, and I will lead the Australian team who do a lot of design and architecture solutions using the Microsoft stack for Australian organisations.
Fantastic. So is that still going to be based here in Perth?
Absolutely. It's based in Perth. I've got a team here locally, a team nationally, and also a global team to lean into.
Oh, congratulations, Vanessa. That sounds incredible.
Thank you.
Yeah, well done. Well deserved, as always.
Thanks.
It seems, though, a really long way from a girl in Geraldton.
Absolutely.
A long time ago. Tell me about your early years in Geraldton and sort of that trajectory from there.
So I grew up in Geraldton. It's a little tiny town, 400 kilometres north. My family are a farming family, very connected to land. My parents had a small business. And I went to Stella Maris College in Geraldton. I aspired to go to university while I was studying in Geraldton, and that was quite different. And I aspired to do law, which was something that was quite different at the time as
different
well.
Different again.
and I'm a big believer that education changes lives, mm. and my experience has been I came from a fairly low socioeconomic environment in Geraldton, a single-parent family in my teenage years. And through studying, I actually understood more about power and more about empowerment. Mm. And I started considering careers and professions and all of those sorts of things. And I found it just an incredibly liberating experience to study. And then from there, I've just kind of navigated. But I always stay close to that grounding of this is the environment that I come from. I don't have a real sense of ego or entitlement. Everything that gets done with people. We listen to each other. We stay grounded in the work, and we do what we can to empower people to do brilliant work. Yeah.
Vanessa, I had the privilege of being at your wedding to Luke, and I still remember the reading that you chose, which was Salt of the Earth, Light of the World. And it's just so, it's so you.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, yeah. And even that reading, it struck a chord with me even last week when I was away, You know, there are times in our life where things do seem dark, and being able to draw on great readings like that to understand the importance of light in our life, the importance of light to shine a light on things that are happening in the world where we need people to take action, like cybersecurity, the importance of being role models to the world as well. You know, I love the catch cry of Witwa, which was, if you can be see her, you can be her. We absolutely need role models. And some of my role models were, you know, women who worked really, really hard. And seeing my mum work and also raise a family gave me this understanding that, of course, that's what I'm to do as a woman, is to both work and nurture a family. And sometimes I find myself nurturing at work, and sometimes I find myself working at home. And that's absolutely okay too.
And you don't describe it as a work-life balance, which is what I really like, because I was saying to someone recently that I was going to have a warm table conversation with you, and she said, oh, are you going to ask her about how she juggles? And I said, you know what, I'm actually a bit sick of that conversation. And you don't talk about work-life balance, because I love the way that you talk about it, like navigating and sailing a ship. Can you share the splashes and the, you know, the delightful dips in the ocean that come with that sort of analogy?
Absolutely. Well, I look to the great artists and the great writers, and when they've achieved great things, they've been all in. And so in my life, where I've achieved great things, I've absolutely been all in. And yes, that's had a splashback effect sometimes on my home life. But there's been other times where my home life has required some focus and some attention and some nurturing. And then I've been able to absolutely do that. And sometimes there's also a spillover of some of the great things I do in my extracurricular kind of life outside of work that then spills into how I lead, how I run teams, how I connect with people. So I like to think of it as an absolute navigation between things, because when I thought about balance, I always thought I was doing it wrong, that something was unbalanced, and to be unbalanced, it didn't feel right to me. But to be all in on something, to achieve something in life, requires sacrifice and requires, you know, things to be a little bit out of balance, but that's just for a particular purpose, to achieve a degree, to achieve a certification, to climb a mountain. It's for a period of time.
It's a moment in time.
It's a moment in time. Yeah. It's not forever. So I've always kind of thought about it like that, the splashback and the spillover effect of sometimes work spilling over into my personal life, and sometimes my personal life spilling over into work. But at the end of the day, to keep focused on doing brilliant work while also maintaining great connections with friends and family and those around you.
You're listening to My Warm Table podcast. My name's Vanessa, and my conversation's with Sonia, and it's all about cybersecurity.
I want to just get back to some of the cybersecurity elements for normal people like myself, Vanessa, who, you know, I'm fairly tech savvy. I'm not going to downplay that. But you know, this idea of staying safe online, so, you know, certainly for family and friends, I'm sure since you ventured into the cybersecurity space all in, everyone's been asking you about how to protect their passwords and how to, you know, what is this multi-factor authentication that you speak of? So can you run us through some of those sorts of things?
Yeah.
All right.
So there are some practical things we can all do to protect ourselves from cybercrime. The first one is strong, unique passwords, and to use a password manager. So make sure that you're using different passwords for every type of service that you use.
Absolutely every single one of them?
Yes. Don't duplicate your passwords.
Ever?
No. Okay. So let's say
I'm asking for a friend.
Absolutely. Yeah. So let's say you have a password on your LinkedIn account, and let's say that the organisation LinkedIn has a data breach and all of those breached records get pasted on the dark web. Someone can actually buy those records on the dark web and then start a phishing campaign based on those username and passwords. If you've duplicated that password on your bank account and on your shopping Coles online order,
your Facebook,
then they've already got your username and your password, and they can then get into those accounts. They can start ordering Coles orders and they can start accessing some of your funds. So absolutely strong, unique passwords is really important. Change them frequently. And a password manager is a really good idea to have to keep track of them, because I think I have hundreds of passwords. And in terms of guidance on how do you do a password, think of a phrase, think of a mantra, think of your favourite quote from a book, put that into a password. Think of an affirmation, I'm strong, brilliant woman, and type that, you know, every time you go into your computer, which is both an affirmation of who you are, but it's also a very secure one because it's long. Incorporate, capitals and other things into the password. Absolutely using strong, unique passwords in a password manager. Two-factor authentication is absolutely critical. You should have two-factor authentication, which is the additional layer of extra security requiring a piece of information like a code to be sent to your phone in addition to a password. For those really critical things in your life, like your bank account, your superannuation bank, your superannuation account, and your medical records, your MyGov, those sorts of things, absolutely those really important, that important data absolutely has to be protected with two-factor authentication. We've all got a job, you and me, to actually help our parents.
Yes,
do that,
definitely.
Right? That's absolutely important. Our young people can teach us and we can teach our parents, and together we can all help with that two-factor authentication, particularly for bank accounts, superannuation accounts, and anything that we access on a regular basis that has funds attached to it. Be really careful with emails and downloads. Always check for scams when you're getting emails. If something is too good to be true, then it probably is too good to be true. Be careful of people who call you that you don't know.
Yes.
So I get a number of calls, and sometimes you answer the call and there's a long pause. That's the first clue to this
Hang
could
up.
Be an overseas call.
Yes.
And don't say your name. Don't give them any information. And don't even say yes or no, because saying yes on one of those calls could actually be a form of contract of a voice confirmation for you accepting goods or services. So actually remain silent. And sometimes I'll use the keypad on my phone or something to have a digital kind of tone go down the line. But just be really careful. Don't share information until they have shared information. And if it says that, oh, look, I'm your bank or I'm Telstra and I'd like to reset your password, always say, let me call you back.
Yeah.
And then call back into Telstra or your bank and say, I've just had a call requesting this be done. Has someone from the branch or someone from your communications provider actually called in? So that's another thing to do. And just be really careful around all of those payment requests.
Mm.
Take time out. Talk to someone about it. Think about it. Go for a walk before you pay it. Just let your brain do its critical thinking. Don't do anything in overdrive.
Mm.
Slow down.
What are some of the clues, though? So if we're getting an email that looks authentic, what are some of the clues to show that it's not authentic?
So look out for poor grammar, awkward phrasing, misspelling. They can be all indicators of a scam. Look out for an organisation that says they're an organisation, but when you look behind it, it's a Gmail account or another account and it doesn't quite look right.
So look at the actual email account that it's coming from, and you'll often find, for example, I got something from Facebook the other day. It said Facebook, but then it went into @gmail.something or other. It
Correct.
Was something else that was not at all authentic to Facebook.
Yeah. And look for the A. The A can be done as like the alphabet A, but it can also be done written in a different kind of way. Sometimes it's as subtle as
right.
the actual characters that they've used don't line up with the corporate branding and logos and all that. There's one letter that just looks unusual. That should be enough just to say, hey, pause.
Pause. That's your big message today, isn't it?
Let's have another look at this, right? Yeah.
What about things like the good old McDonald's Wi-Fi, the free Wi-Fi that you get in the shopping centre and you know, travelling around and you hook onto a different Wi-Fi system? Is there danger in doing that?
There's absolute danger in doing that. I would not connect to a Wi-Fi at an airport, at a fast food restaurant. I think it's a much safer thing to do to actually, when you're travelling, get a SIM card with a data plan that's got its own, you know, I really think Wi-Fi poses a lot of problems because people can intercept that public network and actually see the transactions that you're making. They can actually track the passwords that you're putting in, and so you are more susceptible to being hacked if you're using public Wi-Fi.
And what about social media, Vanessa? What are some of the risks with social media?
Yeah, so certainly not disclosing too much, and certainly being very aware of our children's right, the right to be private. So there's a campaign going on at the moment around share parenting or something like that. Parents who are actually oversharing a lot of their child's achievements. So I very consciously stopped posting about my children as they became adolescents because I was very conscious that this is their life. Mm-hmm. My Facebook is about me. And I just tell a story from my perspective. And if I use a photo of them, I'll seek their permission, just understanding that they have that right. And we sometimes forget that they have a right to remain anonymous, to not be drawn into our story all of the time. And with social media, I would certainly wouldn't be posting anything. Keep your date of birth concealed. Don't share that information. Don't announce significant birthdays and all of those sorts of things. You can do it later or earlier, but be very careful about what you're sharing and what that might be revealing about you that could then be used against you. I think when you're talking about holidays and things like that, send the post when you've come back from the holiday, not while you're kind of at the airport, here's me at the departure lounge, because then people know that you're travelling and you might be on the hop and you might be using other networks and you might be a bit more hurried than normal. So just be careful what you're actually sharing and how that might reveal things about you. One of the things that we do in organisations is an open source intelligence assessment for executives, and we will actually scan all of their public profiles and actually help tell them this is the information that you've revealed and this is the information and how it might be used against you. And this is what's on the public web, this is what's on the dark web, and these are areas where you've used the same password two or three times and could be a risk. So for executives, we do like a personal risk kind of assessment. We can all kind of do that, but we've just got to think about things from a risk lens and be careful that we're not oversharing too much information about our everyday lives.
I was talking to my husband the other day and he said that every time the organisation he works for, they post a new employee's just started. Mm. And he said within a few days, that employee has received an email, a phishing email, telling them, oh, welcome on board, click on here so that we can start in some of your login processes. So they're just so clever and they are following, they're watching.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. Slowly. Like to give it a few weeks before announcing I've started at a new role, just for that purpose, just to get properly onboarded to the organisation, to get a really good sense of getting all of that set up well first. There's all of this kind of giftedness in doing things a little bit slower in the digital kind of realm, if that's possible.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest takeout today, Vanessa, from our conversation is pause. Just stop. It doesn't need to be done right now. Take a moment, trust your gut, do some forensics, and then respond only if it's actually valid.
Yeah. And I want to weave into that pause for your own mental health too.
Yeah.
Remember to take time for yourself, take time to meditate, to walk, to check in with yourself. How am I feeling today? And to sit with that for a little bit. So that pause is also important for our own personal resilience and transformation as well.
It definitely is. Vanessa, it's been so lovely to reconnect with you around the warm table today. Thank you so much for being my guest.
You're welcome.
Thanks for joining me, Sonia Nolan, around the warm table. Let's grow the community. Please follow my Warm Table podcast on socials and like and share this episode with your family and friends. My Warm Table is brought to you by Females Over 45 Fitness. Keep listening now for a health tip from FOF head coach Kelly Riley.
Hi ladies, it's Kelly here, the creator and head coach of Females Over 45 Fitness. How is your stability and balance? As we age, stability and balance can deteriorate. And here at FOF, we help you work on your balance and your stability with all the movements that we do here within the studio, the change in direction, the shifts in body weights, and all the challenges that we put you through here at FOF really helps you improve your stability and balance tenfold. So ladies, it's your time to shine. Let's get out there.